Nature-based solutions are a very important and effective tool for achieving sustainable positive change for people and nature, and therefore also for achieving these ambitious goals of the European Green Deal or the Nature Restoration Regulation.
Welcome to the Merlin Podcast, bringing Europe's fresh waters back to life.
Harnessing the potential of natural processes in freshwater restoration can create significant ecological, social, and economic benefits, according to a major new report. Researchers from the EU Merlin Project analysed restoration monitoring data from 18 rivers, streams, and wetlands across Europe to assess the impacts of so-called nature-based solutions.
Basically, these are all actions aimed at protecting, restoring ecosystems while benefiting people and nature at the same time.
That's the voice of Laura Pott, a Merlin researcher based at the University of Duisburg-Essen, who co-authored the report.
Like the classic nature-based solution we're dealing with in Merlin is the reintroduction of a beaver in Sweden or a beaver population. So this would be like the classic definition of a nature-based solution. But then like a non-classic nature-based solution we're dealing with is a dam removal, or actually several dam removals in Spain, because they want to create a free-flowing stretch of a very central river there by removing these 10 dams.
Such approaches can help amplify natural processes to benefit both people and nature. For example, a healthy wetland can help filter water pollution and buffer floodwaters, whilst planting so-called riparian zones of trees and other vegetation along riverbanks can help provide valuable biodiversity habitat, keep water bodies cool, and lock up carbon to help mitigate climate change.
So from the beaver reintroduction, and this is like mainly ecologic things are expected to be improving. Like you will have different stream flows. So you will have different habitats in your river since the beaver is building dams. And then this will hopefully also lead to an increased pollution degradation, because the pollutants can be captured in like these dammed areas, and then it's easier for like microbiota to degrade them because the conditions there are different and more favorable for degradation. So these are some examples of positive influences these dams have. But then with these dams, it's a bit difficult. There's a higher risk that it might have an actual negative impact for the people in the surroundings, because it is not really predictable where the beavers will build dams. So it could be that there will be some unexpected flooding. And if this happens in an agriculturally used area, then there might be some crop losses due to this.
As Laura outlines, the new report explores the impacts of a diverse range of European freshwater restoration strategies using nature-based solutions. These include peatland rewetting, beaver reintroduction, floodplain restoration and reconnection across a variety of landscapes. Key to this work is monitoring the effects these so-called measures have on both the environment and society.
It's all about basically measuring the impact that de-restoration measures are having, or hopefully having. So it's about proving that the measures you implemented are actually having the effect you were anticipating. And in Merlin, we are having this new approach of not just doing this for the environmental data, which is more common for restoration or freshwater restoration projects. So something like biodiversity indicators, looking at this and that species is now there, which wasn't there before. But it's also about the socioeconomic parts of a restoration project. So we're measuring, does it have any impact on the people that live there, or on the local economy, like agriculture or hydropower, which is often connected with fresh water. Sometimes there's a bit of confusion because the term in like the pure restoration, as in the ecology restoration, is referring to like more or less technical solutions. But this is not the one we're going for. We're going for these actions that have this holistic benefit.
Understanding the impacts of freshwater restoration is vital for mainstreaming its use in Europe, as Axel Schwerk, co-author of the Merlin Report from the Warsaw University of Life Sciences, explains.
It matters for several reasons. The first one, we need solid data which provide evidence how nature-based solutions are working, to which benefits we have, disbenefits, co-benefits, also trade-offs. The second thing is that you get an idea what people are involved, yeah, which stakeholders are involved, and how to involve them in the project, how to convince them for the project, and how to explain them what are nature-based solutions. All these results give us a bigger picture. And they can be used to upscale nature-based solutions, which is very important. We take the results, and then the case studies develop plans on a larger area of countrywide or even wider, and try to apply the results on this larger area.
The results of the Merlin monitoring work show that nature-based solutions in restoration can generate significant benefits both for nature and society. Many of these impacts support the goals of the European Green Deal, which aims to foster climate neutrality, sustainable economies, and healthy, diverse ecosystems across the continent. In this context, Merlin researchers found that using nature-based solutions in freshwater restoration helped boost climate resilience and biodiversity gains, whilst also delivering social and economic benefits such as sustainable job creation and improved social well-being. Here's Laura Pott again.
And then we have the damming situation in Spain. Here, also mainly the positive impacts it will probably have is on fish, for example. So the fish can migrate more easily if there are no barriers anymore. And also the sediment can distribute more evenly. There will not be incision due to excess sediment just getting deposited in front of the dams, so upstream of the dams. Yeah, we were expecting this to have a positive impact on the people living there, since it will have a different optics to it. It will have a more natural look once the barriers are removed, and there will be maybe more fishes for people that are into fishing. But yeah, in reality, it actually turned out that some people liked the optics of this reservoir before the dams, which, well, should be gone after the barrier had been removed. So there was a bit of a problem with that. But in other cases, like the one, like the case study in Germany from the Blue Belt, here we have something similar happening to the Rhine, but it's not a barrier in the stream, but on the riparian zone. Here they removed concrete from the riparian zone and stones to make it more natural. So we have more sandy habitats. And here we had a very, very positive impact on people like in a 20-kilometer radius living around it. They were coming there to have some off time, to have some recreation, and yeah, have like a family weekend there.
The floodplain restoration around the Tisza River in Hungary, described in the report, offers a fascinating window into these dynamics. Restoration of the floodplains around the village of Nagy Kuru, in the middle of the river's catchment, began in 2001. Prior to this, the Tisza had been highly modified by concrete flood walls, which cut the river off from its floodplains. Biodiversity has flourished since the river has been encouraged to return to its natural rhythms by spilling over the reconnected floodplains in times of high water flows. Insect and spider populations have boomed, whilst rare fish species such as the spined loach and European weatherfish use the flooded meadow habitats as spawning grounds. Breeding populations of frogs and toads have also grown alongside those of water birds such as mute swans. This lively landscape has become the focus of new nature walks for people around the area. The reconnected floodplains have also become a carbon sink, with the flourishing vegetation locking up greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. Similarly, the flood and drought resilience of the floodplains has increased, in part due to the installation of a sluice which allows environmental managers to control the flows of water across them. The Tisza River restoration also shows the trade-offs with other land uses inherent in nature-based solutions approaches. Floodplain re-wetting here required a 66% reduction in agricultural land area around the river. Despite this loss in agricultural land, the Merlin report suggests that local communities remain in favour of restoration due to its support for more sustainable agricultural practices and the broader biodiversity benefits it generates. Understanding the dynamics of such trade-offs is vital to monitoring approaches, as Axel Schwerk outlines.
Only a very few trade-offs were visible. Very often, for example, when there is a renaturalization of some habitat, floodplains, then we lose, for example, some agricultural area. So then the criterion for sustainable agriculture, farm to fork, may lose something. But on the other hand, the target was to improve the floodplain. So the basic criteria, what the case study want to do is fulfilled then, yeah.
To navigate these dynamics, it's vital to work with stakeholders around an ecosystem to be restored. Here's Axel again.
A stakeholder for me is somebody who simply is interested in the area we deal with, in the project and the outcomes. And a good example might be sustainable transport. If we have big rivers and we have case studies to deal with the Danube or the Rhine, then transport might be very important. Very often farmers are very important stakeholders. Security might be important because flood risk and drought risk are topics we all know nowadays. And so this is what are the stakeholders, simply. I think it's quite important for several reasons. First, to monitor the stakeholders itself, which stakeholders are involved, and we need this information to implement reasonable nature-based solutions. Therefore, in Merlin also we have a work package 4, which deals with, to a high degree, with stakeholders because it's about transformation aspects. Second thing is monitoring may help to convince stakeholders. Not every stakeholder agrees with the project. There are opponents and there are doubts that the project makes sense. When you have good monitoring data, which show evidence that the situation might improve for this group of stakeholders, also you might convince them. And therefore, this is an important thing. Yeah, and here's a task also for the monitoring. We need evidence. I think this is lacking in many cases and is very difficult, but we need evidence-based results of monitoring, information which is evidence-based, which shows how the nature-based solutions work, where are the benefits, where are the co-benefits also, where are the trade-offs, of course, and only a solid monitoring can show these aspects. What I would say and what many case studies agreed with after some years of Merlin is to have a heterogeneous monitoring. If you to do it and to do it heterogeneous, this means to include really all the pillars, the socio-economic aspects and also the environmental aspects from the beginning. And to build a good contact with stakeholders or with the people living in this area, this is very important. Some case studies said that simply going, drinking a coffee together, explaining sometimes is the real icebreaker. to convince about the project, and such aspects are important. But there's only some examples. I think there can be a lot of advices, and each case study is different, and each case study can draw different advice and conclusions from Merlin, I think. This is extremely important to have this good arguments, but I think also they are often based on good data, of course, also. This goes hand in hand, yeah.
As Axel describes, making decisions about the use of nature-based solutions in such complex landscapes can be tricky. Laura Pott has recently published a journal article on the value of theory of change approaches in helping guide adaptive and forward-looking environmental decision-making. Here she is to explain.
Yeah, this is where the theory of change chips in, because it is a conceptual framework for understanding effects and causal relationships that bridge project interventions with goals. So in our case, it examines how specific restoration measures lead to change, in detailing really all the effects and potential trade-offs. And also in our case, we put them into a time frame even, so we can see what is the expected overall time frame until all the effects will unfold, basically. And as an input, this theory of change concept considers the available resources and also the current condition the system is in. So this is also something that will be considered. And well, the best approach to this in general is if you try to involve all stakeholders in creating this theory of change and do it at the outset of your project. So you sit together with like implementation partners, monitoring partners, landowners, inhabitants, etc. And then you try to consider all the potential threats from all sides. And in the best case, you will have all of the potential effects and trade-offs mapped out before you, and then you will know what to monitor to check if your change is going according to plan, if it's going well. And you can also try to implement measures that counter these potential negative effects that will occur. Yeah, and then this theory of change concept is also, it's coming from the adaptive management. That means that you will not develop this and then not touch it anymore, but you will always get back to it. So you will work with it, and it will also evolve with your project and your process. So if something like with the Iberian case happens, you have the possibility to adapt your concept accordingly and react to it. So you can integrate the new effect that occurred and think about counter effects. What can you do instead? And what does this new effect, where does it sit in this web of effects? What does it impact? What does it prohibit? And how can we like monitor now if we're back on track, or if we like going into the right direction still? So this is the basic concept, what we were dealing with. And we already implemented it with the Merlin case studies, not in the ideal way I just explained. So it was not at the outset of the project, and it was not with all the stakeholders, but it was with the implementation partners and the scientific partners, at least. And very interesting result we had with this theory of changes was that the majority of the expected effects was to be positive. It was around 80%. But still, there were trade-offs considered. So it was not like utopian results. Because these negative effects are integrated, it is transparent. It makes like these possibilities transparent and shows really that these scenarios are being considered. And like in the case of the beaver reintroduction, are tried to be avoided or to be controlled. So maybe that would give interested people living there a sense of safety. And also it is, well, like I said in the beginning, it would be a good opportunity to try to contribute to these theory of changes since they are the in this adaptive kind.
Allowing time for the effects of restoration to develop is important to this theory of change, as Laura explains.
We had like short-term effects, mid-term effects, and long-term effects, and had the expert define these time frames. And it turned out that most of the people set the short time frame to up to 5 years. So that shows really how long it can take for some effects of nature-based solutions to unfold, really. So the majority of the effects were actually put into this midterm time frame. So it can be up to a decade for the majority of the effects of a nature-based solution to really fully unfold. And I think this really depicts the reality because, I mean, let's say we have this dam removal situation, and this is like a really big thing for an ecosystem happening. So it needs a while to get back into its equilibrium to calm down, let's say, because initially there might be some negative effects occurring because everything is so disrupted all of a sudden. But usually in the long term, it has a positive impact. So this is also why it's so important to monitor and to try to monitor like this decade even, which is often not feasible due to financial and resource constraints, but this is something that our theory of change publication really points out again, that if you really, really want to make sure that all of these anticipated effects are occurring and that everything went according to plan, then you need to monitor longer than these 5 or 3 years in our case.
Listening to Laura and Axel speak, it's clear that the new study has two broad lessons for freshwater restoration in Europe. First, it provides clear evidence that nature-based solutions approaches can provide significant environmental and social benefits, whilst at the same time supporting sustainable economic development and contributing to the goals of the European Green Deal and Nature Restoration Regulation. Second, it highlights the importance of detailed monitoring programs that capture the nuanced impacts of nature-based solutions in freshwater restoration. The study shows that whilst nature-based solutions can provide many co-benefits for nature and people, it also highlights the trade-offs and tensions over land use that may arise. Monitoring these dynamics is crucial to be able to make positive and adaptive decisions about freshwater restoration projects as we move into an increasingly pressurised and uncertain future in Europe. You can find the report in the deliverables section of the Merlin website at project-merlin.eu. Look out for deliverable 1.6. And you can find Laura's paper on the theory of change in the Open Access Nature-Based Solutions Journal, which is linked through the academic publications section of the Merlin website. You can also keep up with Merlin on social media and at freshwaterblog.net. The Merlin project is funded by the European Commission's Horizon 2020 programme. This podcast was presented and produced by me, Rob St. John, and the theme music is by project coordinator Sebastian Burke's band, Scala. Background music is by Scott Buckley. Please do like, share and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, thanks for tuning in.